This podcast contains descriptions of violence against children and adult language and is not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silence them. I'm your host, Lane, and this is Episode 70, Lucas Call, Revisited. A few weeks ago, in Episode 65, I told you the story of 2-year-old Lucas Call, who died from blunt force trauma in 2018. His foster mother, Lisa Jo Vanderlinden, took a plea agreement that amounted to a slap on the wrist and was released after just 9 months in county jail. After I released that episode, I heard from a lot of listeners who expressed sympathy for and outrage on behalf of Lucas's biological mom, Shelby Call, whose learning disability was one of the reasons the state of Utah used to justify removing her children from her care in the first place. For this episode, I was honored to speak with Shelby, who is honestly one of the sweetest people I've ever had the privilege of encountering. You'll also hear my candid conversation with Shelby's husband, Lucas's father, David, whose arrest for possession of child pornography set off the chain of events that ultimately led to Lucas's death. This is the heartbreaking story of Lucas Call, Revisited. Before I get into the episode, I'd like to give shout-outs to my newest patrons, Raven from Austin, Texas, Bridget from Corpus Christi, Texas, and Kim S., Marlene M., and Kristen B. from The Upside Down. Thank you all so much for your support and for helping me get even closer to my goal of devoting myself full-time to this. If you'd like to support the show, you can visit patreon.com/stlcpod. For a monthly pledge of $10 or above, you'll get access to Patreon-exclusive bonus minisodes that I release once or twice a month. There are currently 3 available, and I'll be working on the 4th this week. If you've heard episode 65, in which I told you the tragic story of little Lucas Call, you'll be familiar with his parents, Shelby and David, both of whom I talked to for this revisited episode. If you haven't listened to that one yet, I definitely recommend hearing that one first, so I'll link to the episode in today's show notes. I don't normally revisit a case this quickly, but not long after I released episode 65, Shelby reached out to me, and she was more than willing to be my guest on the podcast. Since so many people had sent me messages and left comments expressing sympathy and solidarity for Shelby, I couldn't pass up the opportunity to let you hear directly from her. Right after I talked to Shelby, I also heard from her husband, David, and was surprised at how willing he also was to come on the show and talk about the situation that led to Lucas and his baby sister being removed from Shelby's custody back in 2017. While the crime for which David was convicted, 10 counts of possession of child pornography, is in direct contradiction with what I try to do with this podcast, which is to protect and advocate for children, our conversation was surprisingly enlightening, and I truly feel the remorse David has expressed throughout my communication with him is genuine. Please listen with an open mind and an open heart, because I believe David's mission to keep Lucas's memory alive and to honor his legacy by helping other children is the most important takeaway here. That said, first up is my conversation with Lucas's mother, Shelby Call. My apologies for the sound quality. The only platform we could get to work for this interview was Google Voice, so it sounds like what it is, a recorded phone call.
Today on the podcast, my guest is Lucas's mom, Shelby Call. Thank you so much for joining me, Shelby.
You're welcome.
So I guess we could start at the very beginning. You and David were living in California, and then you decided to go visit Utah for, was it Christmas of 2016?
Yes.
So you had told me that you had gone into preterm labor and that's how you ended up staying longer than you intended.
Yes, that is correct. And we wanted to go back, but I was going into fast labor.
Your daughter was a little early then, right?
No. She was born in February 20th.
So she was perfectly healthy and everything was good.
Mm-hmm.
But then was it February that David was arrested?
Correct.
So after he was in jail is when the whole thing started with the kids getting taken away. So that was within a month or two, is that right?
The same month that was born.
So she was brand new.
Yeah, she was only barely 3 weeks old.
And do you know what happened or why CPS was even involved?
Because of my grandma, Alta, said I wasn't taking care of my children when I was.
That's what your step-grandma, Peggy, said. She said that everything that she saw, you were doing a great job and taking care of everything the kids needed.
And the reason why she called CPS, because I want to get my kids baptized as LDS.
So she kind of had an agenda there.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the kids were placed right into foster care?
Yeah, they went straight to Lisa's house.
So you were able to see them for a while?
Yeah, and my first visit was April 8th, and that's when I seen him and his sister on that day. He had a big goose egg on his head.
What did she say had happened?
He tripped over a stick.
How did he act at that point? Was he already acting scared? Has his behavior changed at that point?
He was scared. He didn't want to go back with them.
This poor little guy.
He just started to cry, but his other behavior started long after that incident.
What did you know about Lisa and her husband at that point?
Nothing. I thought she was a good person. I heard she was a nurse. I thought she would take good care of my children.
Did you know she was working for the Child Abuse Investigation Unit?
No, I did not.
So you started noticing injuries right away. And what mm-hmm. other injuries did you notice throughout the months that they were there?
Bruises in strange places, like around his neck, his pelvic area, under his rib cages, where they don't supposed to be.
Where you don't commonly find childhood injuries.
Mm-hmm. And behind his ears. The one really that bugged the hell out of me is one on his pelvic area.
What did she say that was about?
She didn't tell me what it was, but I already knew what it was. You know how you get a curl iron burn? How it looks? Mm-hmm. It looks just like a curl iron burn.
So he had all kinds of different injuries between bruises and even suspected burns and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, poor baby.
And broken arm. She blamed that on her 4-year-old son jumping on him.
So that sounds like an excuse she turned back to after Lucas passed away. Because didn't she say that her son jumped on him then as well?
Yeah. On her phone, there's evidence that she looked up what kind of injuries he had inflicted on him.
And that was after the fact the police found those searches.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds similar to a lot of child abuse cases in that she tried to blame Lucas's injuries on a lot of different factors, saying he was clumsy, for example, and that her other kids did it to him.
Yeah, and I have proof that he could walk perfectly before he went in her care. And he could talk before he was in her care.
Did he stop talking as much when he was around them?
He completely stopped talking.
So he just wouldn't say anything?
Nope.
Poor kid. Yeah, it sounds like he definitely went through a lot. You had actually mentioned these injuries to DCFS.
Correct. Multiple times.
And what did they tell you, or what was their answer to those claims?
Nothing's going on, and if you don't stop reporting these injuries, we will take away your visit.
And they ultimately did?
Mm-hmm.
And when was that? When was the last time you were able to see them?
A week before he passed away, August 5th, 2018.
Okay. And when did you hear, or how did you find out that had happened to him?
My attorney called and told me to meet him at his office. I went all by myself to his office, and they told me to sit down. There was 2 child services workers and 2 cops and my attorney and his wife.
And you had to find that out all by yourself?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry.
And I called them murderers.
Did they have any idea at that point what had happened?
I'm pretty sure they knew, but they were acting like they didn't. That day that Lucas died, they took out of the home after Lucas passed away that same day. All their children under the age of 18 did get taken away.
it's the hugest loss you can imagine. But then afterward, not being able to see your daughter or have her return to you is even worse.
Then my visit started up again.
So you were able to start seeing her again.
And after a few months, we had a court date, and the judge ever said finally took away my full parent rights because I have a disability.
So they used that as the basis to terminate your parental rights?
Yep.
With no basis for that. I mean, the only evidence they had that you couldn't take care of your kids was your grandma's word.
Correct.
That just doesn't seem fair. It really doesn't. After that, did they actually tell you that you're not allowed to have children?
No, actually, I can still have children.
Okay, that's good.
But I'm not going to have children in the state.
I understand that, absolutely, especially if they're following you around and stopping you if they suspect you have a baby with you.
Yeah, I did I did something kind of silly, but not. I had my son's and my daughter's old stroller. I put a fake baby doll in it with a blanket over the car seat and the mm-hmm. stroller. And I was walking down the street and passing child services. And they saw me pushing a baby stroller. And they came up to me, stopped me, and they ripped the blanket off of the stroller.
That's pretty forward. I mean, for them to think they had the right to do that.
Yeah. And I couldn't do nothing about it.
What did they say when they found out it was a baby doll?
They stomped off.
They couldn't even apologize?
No.
And you were just trying to heal in your own way. You'd lost your one son and mm-hmm. your daughter. You had no rights to her anymore. Of course, everyone deals with grief in their own way. But they couldn't even give you that respect.
No.
I'm so sorry for the way you've been treated throughout this whole situation. And it just seems like the injustices pile up.
Correct. I think lots of people should be in prison by now, but they have broken my disability rights and my regular rights.
You still are in the middle of the lawsuit, is that right?
One of them, but I'm not able to talk about it.
Of course. No, I was under the impression that they were all finished with, so that's at least you have one thing still going.
Yeah, but the first one wasn't able to go through.
Seems like some of the organizations are practically immune from being sued, or they just basically get away with everything.
Yeah.
Now, when you heard that Lisa was going to be spending just a year in jail, what did you think? How did you react to that?
I fell to my knees and broke in tears.
I bet. It's unbelievable. So the judge's excuses for doing that were just absurd. If you paying attention to what the attorney general said, there was no reason on earth.
Right. And they promised me she would get prison time.
Right. Meanwhile, she was out of county jail within 9 months.
Yep. And she can be around children.
That's almost the worst part. I imagine they'll get their own kids back.
They're fighting for them.
Your step-aunt Angel?
I call her my sister.
I'm glad you have that side of the family, at least. They seem very supportive.
If it wasn't for them or my husband, I wouldn't have really no one.
I know she certainly tried to adopt your daughter, and what they did to her as well was pretty shocking, just adopting her out from under Angel on Christmas Eve. There's just so many things that are just wrong about the whole thing. I can't even begin to guess how many people commented or wrote me emails saying how badly they felt for you and how unjust the whole thing was. They were enraged and felt so much sympathy. And I know a lot of people have said to pass that on to you. There are lots of people who have your back here. They feel that you were definitely treated unfairly, to say the least. So right now I don't know if you even want to say what state you're in.
No. Pretty soon, I'm going to go to a different state. I can't give the details of that.
That's fine. But at least you're going to be getting out of Utah. That's the important thing, I think, for you at this point.
Yeah.
I can't imagine there's much there that you'd want to hang on to.
Nope, only my daughter.
And you haven't seen her at all since she was adopted?
Nope. What kind of pictures do you want of Lucas?
Anything you want to send would be great. I would love to see them. You know, he certainly was, like you said, when you talked to Marcus Ortiz, you said he was perfect in every way, and he sure looks like it.
Yeah, and he never cried when he was a baby. He always had a smile on his face, always giggling.
You had told me, what was his favorite song?
Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Did you sing it to him?
Every day and every night. And before he was born, I even sang to him when he was in my tummy.
That's so sweet. What else did he like to do? What do you remember best about him?
His smile. He had the greatest smile ever. If you had a bad day, when he smiled, you could not keep a sad face or a grumpy face on. He made you melt.
I could see that. Those big eyes. Oh, he's just a beautiful boy.
Beautiful blue eyes.
We won't let him be forgotten, that's for sure.
Nope. My husband and I are trying to get a GoFundMe started to start the Lucas Foundation to help other kids in his position.
Well, if you need help getting that started, just let me know. You know, I'll certainly help you in any way I can. You know, it's very important to me to help keep these kids' memories alive. And the Lucas Foundation sounds like an excellent idea. Uh-huh. What better to do than to help other kids like Lucas?
Right, because no kids deserve being abused or beaten up or anything like that.
Exactly.
I still can't believe the one thing that she did to him, though. At 3 o'clock in the morning when he passed away, she washed his body in the bathtub. After that, she wiped down his whole body and his mouth with a Clorox wipe.
And just left him in bed.
Uh-huh. And didn't call 911 until 8 o'clock in the morning.
That is just despicable. It's awful. It's inhuman, especially for someone who claims to love children as much as she supposedly did.
What actually killed him? You know your large intestines? He had a hole in his.
So she hit him hard enough that it perforated his intestines.
And all his waste flooded his body, and that's how he died.
Well, I hope he went to sleep and didn't have to feel any of it.
I hope so, too.
And wherever he is now, I'm sure he's very proud of you for carrying on the way you have, because it is admirable that you're so strong. And I know it's got to be very hard and seem impossible at times, but you're doing amazing.
Thank you.
I hope you don't blame yourself at all for any of this, because it was not in any way your fault.
I'm getting better, not.
That's good, because I can understand, you know, the feelings of regret, and those are hard to get rid of, but you didn't do anything wrong at all. You just loved your children and took care of them. It's too bad that the interference of people who should have kept their nose out of it is what started the whole thing.
Uh-huh, and my mom's side of the family never wanted me to have children.
And that's not at all their business either. It's not their place to tell you that.
Nope.
You know, they do have to live with this at this point, knowing that their interference caused this. So, you know, I don't like to say I hope it weighs heavily on them, but I certainly do hope that they never forget that.
When Heavenly Father comes to Earth to judge, they're going to be judged cruelly.
It certainly doesn't sound like they've taken all the steps to get where they want to go.
Nope.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about or that we didn't go over that we, you know, you want to get in there?
If anyone wants to help me try to get my daughter back, I would love help. She needs to come home.
Yeah, it would be great if you could be reunited with her.
And she's four now.
I'm so sorry that this has all happened, and we'll do anything that we can to help you and certainly to support you. You have a lot of people who are behind you on this.
I want to say thank you to everyone.
I'm sure they will be more than happy to hear from you. And I really appreciate you calling and talking with me and telling us about Lucas. Do you have any other memories of him you want to share?
This is one time my husband was sleeping on the couch and Lucas was laying right against him, sleeping, and he had the biggest smile ever.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, he seems like a little guy who loved his parents.
And he had the greatest giggle. And his favorite color is light blue. He loved to talk. He was a talker.
When did he start talking?
He was a year and a half. He started actually talking. His first word was, Mama!
That's awesome. How did he feel about his sister?
He loved his sister. They shared everything. They did everything together.
Well, I'm sure he's watching over her now.
Yeah.
Well, hang on to those good memories. You know, that's definitely the way you want to remember him. He deserves to be remembered, and we will help you with that as well. He'll never be forgotten.
Thank you.
Let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
We will.
If you're like me, you're a bit overwhelmed by all of the teeth whitening products on the market. This next sponsor has provided me with some very interesting facts to pass on to you. Fact 1, teeth whitening does not whiten your teeth. It removes the stains and restores the tooth to its natural color. Natural colors vary per person, but for most, it's an off-white or slightly yellowish undertone. Fact 2, teeth whitening does not damage teeth, but it does temporarily dehydrate. When dehydrated, the pores in the enamel are open and exposed. Open pores invite acids and sugars, which, as we all know, lead to tooth decay. Avoid or minimize acidic and sugary substances for at least 24 hours after whitening. Also, avoid staining substances as the teeth are more susceptible to restaining during this period. Fact 3, tooth sensitivity is the result of tooth dehydration. When the pores of the enamel are open, the teeth become dehydrated, exposing the nerve to the elements. As the tooth rehydrates, the sensitivity will dissipate. To accelerate the rehydration and curb sensitivity, use a post-whitening application known as remineralization or desensitizing gel. Fact 4, caps and veneers cannot be whitened because they do not have pores for the stains to latch to. Prior to having dental work, you should whiten your teeth, restoring them to their natural color, as the dentist will be color matching to your current shade. Fact 5, the key to teeth whitening is the delivery device. So as long as a whitening product is a peroxide-based whitener, it will remove the stains. What differentiates one product from the next is the device that holds the whitening agent to the tooth without interruption. Whitening strips neglect the crevices and molars, and they slide on your teeth. Saliva floods the generic trays because they are bulky and do not create a seal. Oh, and you likely did not know this, but LED lights are novelty items that add no benefit. You need a high-output UV light only found at the dentist. Don't fall for the gimmick. If you insist on a light that does not work, get one on Amazon for under $5. The number one whitening device recommended by dentists is the custom-fitted tray. You can have your dentist make you trays for $300 to $600, or you can head over to smilebrilliant.com and use their Lab Direct mail-in process for a fraction of the price you would pay at the dentist. Oh, and if you grind your teeth at night, you can also purchase Smile Brilliant's custom-fitted night guards, once again, for a fraction of the price the dentists charge. Once again, that's smilebrilliant.com, and use my coupon code CHILDREN for an exclusive Suffer the Little Children discount. Shelby is literally one of the sweetest people I've ever talked to, and the way she's been mistreated throughout this entire situation is utterly heartbreaking. But her strength and perseverance is inspiring, and I wish nothing but the best for her from here on out. Next, you'll hear my conversation with Lucas's father, David Call, who, despite his shame and remorse, is an open book. Hi, David. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that I'm coming into this meeting, to be honest, but there's a little bit of fear about people who, once they learn about my crime, they might not be so happy.
Well, you know, it was mentioned in the episode. I honestly didn't get any comments about that. Everyone was just so sympathetic to Shelby.
And that's what's really important to me is that what I did was awful, but I don't want to lose sight of what Lucas is for us. He is a son that we miss, we mourn every day. I look into my wife's eyes even this morning, and I just know that I can be a good man to her forever. And it's my desire to prove that for the rest of my life and for her to allow me to be a part of her life. I'm blessed. So I have to, when moving forward with my life, I have to bring something positive to such a horrible tragedy that happened to our son. So that's why I want to say I'm grateful for what you do for all the children that have suffered. So I think what you do is amazing. I did listen to some of those other ones and I couldn't keep my eyes dry.
No, it's pretty tough, but these kids deserve to be remembered, and I can do that for them through this platform. So it's important to me to keep doing it.
Well, as a first-time listener, I'm grateful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, Shelby and I had a conversation, and then we talked the day after that. You wanted to clear up a few things and come clean about a few things so that we don't detract from Lucas's story and the importance of how you and Shelby plan to keep his memory alive.
That is true. It is important that we move forward with remembering Lucas, even the way that they painted the story, the Van der Linden defense about how he was a troubled child. I think any child that has been or being abused is not going to be a child that's going to have a smile on his face.
Especially when they've been taken out of their mother's arms and placed into this abusive home.
Well, my actions led up to it. And I can't say enough about a wonderful woman that Shelby is, and to be an amazing wife for me. I'm trying not to get choked up now, just to think about her. Those who get to know her fall in love with her for just the spirit that she has in her. For the state of Utah to use my crime and her disability as an excuse to take a child to put up for adoption.
A lot of people had plenty of things to say about, you know, Shelby's disability, especially being used as a reason to take the kids away from her when she was clearly a very loving, doting mother.
I don't know if she sent you any pictures yet, but every single picture that we have of him, he has a smile. And when we have hundreds of them, it kind of says a lot in his first year about how happy he was.
He looks extremely healthy and very happy and well cared for. Yeah, she did send me a lot of pictures, and some of them I hadn't seen before. I got tears in my eyes just looking at them. He's just such a beautiful little boy, and he just looked so happy. But he certainly looked sadder after he was taken out of the home. So do you want to address that? You know, what actually led up to the kids being removed?
My addiction to pornography. Yes, of course. I was married for 17 years before, and during that my first marriage, I started diving into pornography. And the more I seen, the more I couldn't stop. I went to another level. And without asking for help, because it was more important that I keep it a secret, I just wasn't strong enough to help myself. I heard a story at a Christmas dinner, something that I'll let my wife share if she needs to. But I used that as my justification to look at child pornography, in which I was arrested for and charged. My original count was 20, but if I pled guilty to 10, they would drop the other 10. And I was hoping for leniency. The county decided that they wanted to make an example of me, and they did. So I served 4 years in prison for my crime. I had everything from infants to adult on my computer.
And was it all downloaded at once, or was it kind of over time?
Well, I've been looking at pornography for about 12 years. The child pornography stuff was about a 3-week period of time, started in December, and it ended in January. It ended very abruptly because I saw something that I wish I could unsee. I don't even want to go into detail about that, but there's just some things that are just horrible. So I was even asked in my interview, what made you stop looking at child pornography? And I basically told the detective, Detective Sean Smith, the same thing I just told you, is got to a point where you can see something, if you see something, you wish you can unsee. It didn't matter to them. I committed a crime, and I was going to take responsibility for it, but my heart went out to my wife because she was going to get blindsided when she got home after her doctor's appointment. It was an ultrasound because she was pregnant with at the time.
And you were arrested before she gave birth?
Yes. It was approximately the middle of January, the last time that I viewed. I even damaged the screen on my laptop when I slammed it shut. And then 2 weeks later, February 1st, I was arrested. They searched, it took all the electronic devices. But I still had a flash drive in my cell phone that still had pictures of maybe 12, 13, or 14-year-olds on my device.
And how did they know? What tipped off the authorities?
Well, through 3 weeks, downloading massive files, I believe some of them had some type of tracking, IP tracking. So when they tracked my IP, then they found out where I was located, then they did a search warrant.
Sure, that makes sense. I would imagine they're always looking out for things like that.
I would hope so. With my actions themselves, I'm creating the demand for more to be harmed, for others to keep finding and viewing themselves. And I want to advocate for children who have suffered through any kinds of abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. However, with my crime, I'm not allowed to. So all I can do is help and promote other agencies to continue their search for individuals who do that harm to children.
So basically, that period in your life, you feel that's behind you. You don't have any interest in that sort of thing at this point.
I don't. I can't allow something that has such a tremendous hold on me through an addiction to have that control over me again. Right. I never wanted my son to be harmed. I never wanted my children to be taken away from my wife. I never wanted my wife to cry as much as she has in these last 4 years. So, again, such a horrible act. I hurt so many people. Those in the pictures that I'd never even knew, and even all the ones that were close to me. I feel as though I deserve forgiveness, but looking from outside in, can I be forgiven? And I'll just let that up to the individuals who get to know me.
And did you get any type of therapy or help while you were in prison or afterward for the addiction, or how did you overcome that?
They do have what they call sex offenders treatment program, incarcerated. I took the therapy in prison very seriously. I understand how dopamines in the body work. That's basically where the addiction centers begin. I learned that I'm in control of my actions, my thoughts. I always have to be conscious and aware. I work on a construction site, so you got men who, you know, cuss, curse, and talk about ladies all day. Just normal hooting, hollering type of stuff. These are good men. They don't talk derogatory about women, but, you know, sex is a constant conversation that is always brought up. And I just have to be consciously aware, because believe it or not, I don't want to allow myself to be involved with pornography. But there's that constant pull from where I'm so used to for 12 years that if I don't have control of myself, it could be like a picture here and a picture there. And then again, you know, when I started looking at pornography back in 2005, who would have thought that I would ever have wanted to look at a child?
Right. If that's not something that you were previously interested in, but it devolved to that point.
No. And it is, it's post-pubescent. And my attraction is to the woman form. Mm-hmm. And child is a child whose brain has not even developed. And for anyone to figure out a way to get inside their head, to make them do what they want them to do, is just absolutely wrong. Human brains aren't fully developed until the age of 25. So when you think about that concept, these laws are in place to protect children from predators. I will have to register the rest of my life as a sex offender. But people can see there's a predator.
Understandable. And there's no distinction, really, as far as the law goes, between someone who looked at it once for a period of time, as opposed to someone who has looked at it for a length of time.
Or even those who produce it themselves.
Really?
Yeah. So my crime is up there with those who perpetrated against the child. So it's not only about downloading it, internet pictures, it's being a producer of them, too. There was even a teacher that had produced many pictures himself from his students. And he had the same amount of counts and did the same amount of years as I did. So the law is harsh when it comes to that. Utah laws and every state laws need to be harsh when it comes to protecting children.
Yes, definitely. But I do think there should be stronger punishment for those who produce it, because they're actually actively harming the child involved.
Can I bring up a point that makes me angry?
Of course.
By no means am I diminishing my crime, because it is a horrible crime. But I have to register for my rest of my life. I have to go through steps, which is going to be approximately 5 years before I can even be around children. And I will do all that I can to show that I care and I want to be trusted, and that I don't have a desire for children. But I have to constantly prove that.
Right.
But when a woman, or even a man, I'm just more focused on Lisa Jo Vanderlinden, she can get away with what she did, not even have to do prison, mm-hmm. get out and have constant access around children. And she killed one.
Right.
She killed one, and she doesn't have to register? No, as a sex offender, but someone who, aren't we supposed to protect our children? They wrote over 70 letters on Lisa's behalf, all members from the church, And you would think if it's such a loving church, the LDS church, wouldn't there be some that would have sent letters to Shelby saying, I'm sorry for your loss?
You would think.
That's what I would think.
I think Shelby has been mistreated by absolutely everyone involved. It's what's been done to her is beyond unfathomable. Everyone's sympathy is with her. You know, after I told this story, like I said, I received so many messages from people reaching out to her with sympathy, and people asked me to send her a letter or pass on to Peggy, her step-grandmother that I spoke to, pass on notes or messages to send to her because they felt so terribly for her. And I agree. I think anyone who has any type of contact with Shelby or even sees an interview with her just feels the goodness radiating off of her. So for all of this to happen to such a good person and a loving mother is unforgivable.
It is. Well, I promise you, as I promised my wife, that I need to do something good. I need to bring a legacy to Lucas's name and to personally live in honor of his sacrifice, our loss, and to do good with the world and to work as well as I can with any agencies that will accept our help. And Shelby and I, we have an open lawsuit here, and we're looking to go federal for I guess what would be called the civil rights violations, especially on Shelby's behalf. So we're looking at going to Denver. But with our attorney, Michael Abram, he will assist us with the creation of the Lucas Foundation. And although we'll have to come up with another name. We'll have to do like a Lucas J. Call Foundation, since Lucas Foundation has been taken already. We're going to do that. And every penny, if there's any donations or anything, all of that will go to the foundation in Lucas's name to help bring awareness. And I think one of the biggest things that we need to do is for all states, all districts and counties, that they need to start implementing some type of therapy program for these foster parents, foster mothers and fathers. Mm-hmm. When you have so many children in a household, there has to be a tremendous amount of stress, enduring stress. Even with all the love that they put into the families, there's still the stress compounding. So how do we get the parents help?
Absolutely. That should be mandatory, at least on a periodic basis, to check in with these people. It's got to be incredibly stressful.
Have you yourself looked into some of the corruption that's involved in the juvenile courts, not only in this state, but in so many other states? It's just how the courts, the Department of Family Services, how they work together to take children. And then it comes out that there's government funding, grants. There's a profit in adoption. Should there be a profit for adopting a child out?
There shouldn't. There should be no profit in the exchange of children in any way. And it seems that across the board, not even just in this country, but in others around the world as well, the agencies that are supposed to be protecting children are doing the opposite. And the family courts that are supposed to be in place in the best interests of children are also doing the opposite of what they're intended to do. They're taking kids from the wrong families. They're giving them to the wrong families.
Being in prison, I've heard so many stories, and I believe every one of them needs to have their stories out. I do. Also, serving time in prison, I have come across so many people that I would be afraid for their release. Their intent is not good. But there are other people that have done time in prison or who are doing time in prison with a heartfelt remorse towards the people that they hurt and the differences they want to make. I just want your listeners to know that there's so many good people still.
I agree. Prison can't be filled with all terrible people, especially not considering the privatization of prisons and the fact that there's profit in that as well. But
there is.
You know, even the people who have committed crimes, not even to talk about the innocent people in prison, but the ones who have committed crimes and have remorse. That's why some other countries do have the right idea, I believe, with some of the rehabilitation that's done. I don't think our country handles that as well as they should, but I'm really glad to hear at least that they do have programs such as the one that you took part in, just to help the people who will be helped.
Briefly, I spoke negative about the LDS church, but I can't believe that everyone that goes to church are bad.
Right.
Shelby and I, we have our faith in our Lord, and we love the fellowship with other people. I just also know that those who empower enlist other people to help maintain their power, even when it comes to corruption. So when you take away oversight, then you allow corruption to run rampantly in any district or state.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely, I believe, an oversight. I believe there's a lot of good people that go to church, and I want them to continue going to church. But do right by yourself and do right by others.
Agreed. I don't think that doing right by others or doing what you think is right by your church includes making reports to CPS because you're unhappy with the religion a family member has chosen for their children and such.
I promise you that I will not bring harm to another child through viewing offending pictures. And I promise you that as I continue moving forward with the Lucas Foundation, that we're going to give all that we can to help other children from their abuse, not just physical or mental or sexual abuse, but even fight against human trafficking. That's I believe awesome. That saving children is really important. But we have people who deliberately do harm, and then we have people who are in power that can help children, but use them to, what would be the word for Lisa? Just
hers is so, it's just so difficult to, why did she do that? She scapegoated your son. For what reason? I can't imagine why she chose him out of all of the children in her home. There's no way he was more disturbed than any other child in her home. There's no way he was that disruptive. He was only two.
He was only two. He was taken when he was one, though.
He was a baby.
A baby just wants to be loved, held, fed, keep me clean.
And she seemed to have no trouble doing that for his sister. So why not him? I don't understand her logic. There may have been no logic. You know, there's so many strange psychological reasons, but there's no justification for it.
It is my opinion that if Lucas wasn't going to love her, she was going to make him love her, even if it meant fear and pain. And Lucas fought her every step of the way, saying, I'm never going to love you more than I love my own mom. And he fought to the end.
He was a tough little guy, that's for sure.
I can't help. I have to be angry with myself. I've gotten so, when I was in prison, where anger had become my friend, and I don't want it to be anymore. I just didn't want for the long time to face the reality that I'm the one who brought the evil into the house, and I feel a lot of responsibility to what happened to our son.
I can understand that. It seems that Shelby has forgiven you, and that must be a huge relief at the very least.
It is. Loving her is the best thing that God's given me the ability to do. So I thank God for her in my life. I do all that I can to give her a reason to smile every day. I want to keep proving to her I deserve her love.
If you treat her the way she deserves, I think she'll stand by you. And that's probably the best thing for both of you. It's you two against the world at the moment. So having each other has got to be very healing for both of you.
Did she even tell you how we met yet? Or she probably would have already told you that.
She did. Yep, she did. And she said she pursued you.
She did. 3.5 months. And I said yes. And I have no regrets. One of the things that I really miss about him is his giggle. You ever hear when a baby giggles, you know how it just lights you up?
Absolutely.
I miss him, and I don't get to see him smile anymore, and I don't get to hear the giggles, but the sound of his giggle still is with me. And for you and all your listeners, I just want to say that I'm sorry for what I've done to bring harm to children, and that I ask for forgiveness. And believe me when I say that I do want to move forward in a very positive way to bring a happy life for my wife and to bring a very positive remembrance for Lucas.
I do feel like, you know, that's coming from a very genuine place, and I appreciate that. And I think my listeners will too. You know, you seem very genuinely apologetic, and you have genuine remorse for what happened. And just to make it clear, I know you and I spoke about this the other day, but your children were never involved in your viewing or any of the materials.
Absolutely not.
So I just wanted to make sure we cleared that up just in case that question was out there. But almost anyone can be redeemed. And I don't believe that your actions would put you in the category of someone who could never be redeemed, especially if you're going forward with a noble mission and your main objective to give Shelby a life that she can be proud of and happy with. You know, that's wonderful. She absolutely deserves that.
Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak with you today.
Huge thanks to both Shelby and David Call for talking to me for the podcast and for sharing with me their pain, regret, and devotion to keeping Lucas's memory alive, which you all know is the most important thing to me. Once they're able to get Lucas's foundation off the ground, of course I'll share the link on all of my socials. Until then, I'll be keeping this family in my thoughts and holding them close to my heart, and I can promise them that Lucas will never be forgotten. That's it for this week. Join me next week for another story. If you like the show, please follow or subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening app. And please leave me a 5-star rating and a positive review on your favorite podcast platform. You can also subscribe on YouTube by searching Suffer the Little Children Podcast. Visit the website at sufferthelittlechildrenpod.com, where you can listen to episodes or become a patron for rewards ranging from a shout-out by name on the show to exclusive gifts. Follow the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Pinterest at Suffer the Little Children Pod, and on Twitter and TikTok at STLC Pod. View photos related to today's episode on Facebook and Instagram. For more stories like the one you heard today, visit sufferthelittlechildrenblog.com. This podcast is researched, written, hosted, edited, and produced by Lane. Intro theme music is by Dream Note Music, and all music for the show is licensed from audiojungle.net. Email tips, comments, questions, or case suggestions to sufferthelittlechildrenpod@gmail.com. For more information about preventing or reporting child abuse, visit childhelp.org or call your area's child abuse hotline. If you see something, say something. Until next week, bye everyone.